Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, clinical canine herbalist, Rita Hogan.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Tino Macchia. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Integrative veterinary medicine and herbalism for your dog. This is our episode 844 of the Life Changes Show, and integrative veterinary medicine. I don't know that I've ever given any thought to the fact that that exists for veterinary medicine. And so happy to see that word. We're going to also hear and potentially read about, if you go into the book, we're going to be discussing holistic and holistic herbalism, holistic medicine. So holistic herbalism is a way of healing that uses natural herbs to treat the whole person, and in this case, going to be the whole dog. In a sense, body, mind, and spirit, at least for humans, holistic herbalism. These are definitions that I found. We're going to talk to our guest about this, but I'm mentioning it, and I'll mention one more. It tries to find and fix the root cause of sickness by healing the whole body. And holistic living tries to balance our mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. Well, I don't know that very many people put dogs into the equation. Like, they talk about the environment, and of course, sometimes family will come up or friends or something like that. But of course, animals. But dogs are not only in the equation in this conversation. They're central, and we will find out why. And it's so interesting that in finding out why and how important the dogs in our lives are, if we have dogs in our lives, then what's interesting is that in reading this book, I was learning things about the dogs and then learning things about myself that I think I wish I would have known, and that I think I can incorporate even for me currently, not without a dog. Here's something. These are not in any particular order, but that came from the book that I thought, oh, this is good. This is good. I got to write this down for me. Hippocrates, the so-called father of modern medicine, this is right out of the book, we'll talk about it in just a moment, had two important theories that today's science is currently proving valid. It's more important to know what sort of person has a disease than to know what sort of disease a person has. What? Evidence-based medicine has a mechanistic view of the body, presuming that parts and systems can be fixed or removed without affecting others. And our guest goes on to say in the book, holistic herbalism views the body as a reflection of nature and functions on the premise that a dog, for example, is an ecosystem. We're going to get into that, in which everything is connected. Just a couple more that I just found fascinating. That she goes on to say that what we do in our environment directly affects our dog's emotional and physical health, whether we like it or not. She says that these feelings can put us into fight or flight mode, for example, and our stress directly affects our dog's stress. And as is the case for humans, a dog with chronic stress is at risk of a wide range of health issues. I mean, wow. I literally could go on and on as I was fascinated to, again, learn things about dogs, learn things about myself, and learn things about the collective. So as we're listening to this, potentially reading between the lines that if it's affecting our dogs, just putting it out there, it might be affecting our spouse, might be affecting our children, might be affecting our friends and coworkers.
might be affecting everyone.
The world.
This is such an important conversation. I was really thinking about, you know, my Midwestern upbringing and how, you know, a lot now it's certainly changed over the years and gotten much better, but it was always, they're just animals. And so much got through the just tick the box of whatever kibble, whatever, you know, processed. And then the more you learn about that processing, and then you wonder all the things we talk about with humans and the energy flow and the sensitivities. Oh, this is going to be a good one.
Yeah. And how, I mean, dogs need to stay outside. I like in the book, she actually says that she could share this later if she wants, but like they left the garage door open so the dog could go in or out, like has a choice.
I'm pretty sure there's a planet somewhere that is inhabited by dogs where the humans stay outside.
Okay. And with that, moving on to our guest, who is an educator, a speaker, a writer, an herbal medicine maker, and clinical canine herbalist, Rita Hogan, CH. Welcome to the Life Changer Show.
I'm so excited to be here. It's awesome. Thank you.
It's so great to have you. And I have to say, I think I told you this when we spoke, but when I got a copy of the book, I was so surprised, not just what I mentioned, but it is so comprehensive and it covers so many different aspects that I wouldn't have expected. Like, is it an herbal book? Is it a medicine book? It's an everything book. And then I started to learn more about you, and then it all made sense. Like, everything that's in the book, you have kind of lived. Take us from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. My dogs have always been a reflection of the way that I have lived, you know. It's such a privilege to share our homes and our lives with these furry little creatures, you know, our dogs and cats. You know, they're in our home and we kind of take that for granted, but it is such a privilege. And I grew up on a farm in the Midwest in Upper Michigan. And, you know, our dogs and cats were very central to our lives. You know, I talk about in the book, my dog, Susie, she was a shepherd collie mix. She lived to at least 24. We know for a fact that it's 24. It could be as much as 27, but we know for a fact it's 24. And she lived a very simple lifestyle that dogs used to live, and their longevity was, you know, that was normal in the early 1970s that dogs lived in well into their 20s. It was completely normal. Now a dog, people get excited when a dog lives to 10.
Wow. And
so, you know, there's things, my book is all about, really about dogs as an ecosystem. And basically a healthy dog is a way of life. And the way of life for me as a kid was, we lived on a farm. My dog, Susie, you know, she spent most of her days outside following me around, laying in the grass, exploring the woods, you know, interacting with the soil, foraging for different types of plants, eating rodents and little bunnies, which used to make me cry. You know, she ate raw milk and meat scraps, and she didn't eat processed food. She wasn't spayed, and she was barely vaccinated. So she just kind of lived a little dog's life, and she hardly, I don't remember her ever getting sick. And she just was always there. She was just like a, you know, a part of the family. She was there when I left for college, and I mean, it was crazy. So, and then, you know, fast forward to my 30s, I started boarding dogs, kennel free and in the mountains of Tennessee. And I lived with like 20, 30 dogs a day, which was nuts. But I learned so much about dog behavior and people behavior, you know, and how much people love their dogs, but how sick dogs were getting as time went by. And the diets that they were eating just weren't serving them, and how much pharmaceuticals that dogs were on. And I was really like taken aback. And that's when I just decided to turn my herbalism studies into canine herbalism.
Another thing that struck me, not only your connection with animals, but your connection with plants talk to us about that, especially if you wouldn't mind sharing the story about picking a particular flower and your mother said no, something like that.
Yeah, so lady slipper, you know, in the woods in the Midwest, in Upper Michigan, there was a lot of trillium, which are those beautiful, like, three-petaled flowers that you're, of course, not supposed to pick. You can't cultivate them. So, I mean, it's very hard to cultivate them. And then lady slippers, which are now very endangered, but they're the most beautiful flower. I believe they're in the orchid family. And
I'll have to look it up because I have no idea, but yeah, obviously you knew.
Absolutely gorgeous. And I wanted to pick it for my mom. And she said, you know, no, you know, that flower's beautiful, but it's meant for a different purpose than just, you know, for me letting it die within a couple of days, you know.
Wow.
It has a purpose of, you know, to reproduce. And it was an eye opener for me because I really wanted to pick it. You know, I really wanted to pick it because my mother loves flowers, and I'm so glad that I didn't. But she explained to me why we don't pick lady slippers, and that was a big thing. And plants have always played a huge part in my life, for sure. You know, they definitely will talk to you if you'll take the time to listen.
Oh, tell us more about that.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, there was a book, I think it was written in the late 60s, early 70s, and it was called the Secret Life of Plants.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was republished, I think, in the last decade. But it talked about how plants can speak to one another over hundreds of miles. And these two scientists did all of these experimentations on plants. Like, for instance, they put electrodes on indoor plants and fried an egg, right? They put it in the fryer and, you know, in the pan and fried an egg. And the energy in the plants went absolutely crazy.
Wow.
The same energy, it was the same exact kind of frequency energy that was if you held flame up to their leaves. And there was so much information in that book that made me question the world around me, and what was happening, and all of these things that, you know, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, I don't know the timeline, but we were in tune with nature. You know, my grandmother was in tune with nature. She was in the Great Depression. They had no money for medical doctors, nothing. She had a midwife and that's it. And, you know, my mother shares these lovely stories about my grandmother going into the forest with a basket and coming out like 4 to 5 hours later with everything she needed, and how they used to have to eat cod liver oil every spring, throughout the spring to help with their livers, and the mushrooms that my grandmother used to pick, and how, you know, a beef roast would last 15 kids for a week. And, you know, it was just fascinating because we used to be in tune with these plants. You know, my dad knew plants. He wasn't an herbalist, but he knew the plants. And wow. We used to rely so heavily on the world around us and, you know, pass that knowledge down to our children. And we just don't do that anymore.
So what brought it all together for you, saying, this is what I got to do? When I introduced you, I said, Rita Hogan, CH, and that stands for canine herbalist, right?
A canine herbalist and clinical herbalist.
And clinical herbalist. Okay. And so that, is that something that new ish?
Well, you know, the thing with canine herbalist. So when I decided to study, go back to the plants that I grew up with, when I decided to start like dedicating my life to plants, you know, I was thinking about working with people. And again, I boarded dogs and they were so sick. And I thought, you know, I'm going to start working with these dogs that I board. And so I did. They were definitely my first clients. And I also did a holistic pug dog rescue for in Tennessee. It was called Music City Pug Rescue. And I helped a lot of those animals, along with a behaviorist friend of mine, with plants, non-toxic plants, and kind of saw how they worked, what didn't work, because in rescue you don't have a lot of money either. And I worked with this one vet named Kevin Brummett, and after about 2 years into it, after I started working with my boarding clients, someone asked me one day, what are you? What do you do for a living? And I thought, well, I'm a canine herbalist. I was the, just rolled off the tongue, right? Just, I'm a canine herbalist. And then during that time, I learned about an herbalist in England that had been working with animals for, since the late early 40s. And her name was Juliet Levy, and she has since passed, but I got a hold of one of her books and it was just so fascinating. And then there were two women, Barbara Frege and Susan Wynn, who wrote Veterinary Herbalism, and it was like a textbook that I had to save money for months to get it. And that really changed my life. And then, there was this lady named Cheryl Swartz, who's a DVM in California. She's been a DVM for like probably 4 decades, and she actually wrote me an accommodation for my book. So it kind of like it came full circle, right? But and I actually helped her with her cat, and that was a surreal moment for me. But Cheryl Swartz wrote this book called Four Paws, Five Directions, and I read that like around 2005, and that book changed my life. It really helped me see the body as an ecosystem and understand that everything's connected, and that my current paradigm of thinking of Western medicine was all messed up if I really wanted to heal the body, like if I really wanted to balance it out so that it would thrive and have longevity. And that's when my life changed. And the proof is in the pudding, right? I've helped thousands of dogs, lots and lots of veterinarians with hard cases. They call me and ask me, what herb do you think I should use? I'm not a traditional Chinese medicine herbalist. I'm a Western herbalist. It's what it's called, because I use the medicines that are found here in North America and in North America, basically. They're also found in parts of Europe like Ireland and England. But yeah, it's fascinating. My life has taken a turn for the fascinating. It's very fascinating, and I love the work.
It is fascinating. So you touched on it. The dog, a dog is an ecosystem. And by that you mean.
We have been conditioned through Western medicine to think that you can take out a gallbladder and sometimes even take out a spleen, give someone a hysterectomy, and start taking out organs, and it doesn't affect the body as a whole. And that's just not true. So, and it really starts with like, we also have been conditioned to accept spay and neuter as something that we just do without question, right? But we're taking out 25% of our dog's endocrine system.
Oh.
And we are, doing, well, I would say major amounts of harm to their nervous system when we do that. And most people take dogs home and all they're worried about is the incision. We don't want the incision to get infected. But what they should be worrying about is their dog's nervous system and their dog's endocrine system and how their hormones are going to tank. And a lot of times, a lot of times, well, in recent times, veterinarians have been, and res especially a lot of rescues, have been spaying and neutering dogs under like 16 weeks, which is absolutely insanity because they need those hormones to develop their bones. They need their hormones to develop their bodies. So we really need to start waiting for a couple of years, in my opinion, so that those hormones can take place and our dogs can get a better footing for the rest of their lives, because their longevity is going right down the tank. And again, dogs are starting to be talked about as geriatric, like 8 or 9, which is a travesty.
Wow. Is that one of the biggest problems that dog people have? People that have dogs have?
Definitely. Well, it's one of the problems. Another big problem is the overuse of antibiotics. These are all things that affect the body as a whole. Antibiotics do the same thing they do in people. They annihilate the microbiome in the large intestine, and that is over 80% of the immune system, and it just dominoes from there. And so causes a lot of like IBD, IBS, dysbiosis in the entire gastrointestinal tract and hard on the liver. And everything, like my book, The Herbal Dog, it's an herbal book for sure, and it's a reference, but what it really focuses on is organ health. And everything that you can think of that you bring your dog into the veterinarian for, almost everything, I would say 99% of everything, even some genetic things, because they're epigenetic, they're being turned on by the foods and by our environmental toxins and things like, and the way the liver's processing toxins, they can turn on genes that don't need to be turned on, at a detriment to the animal. So, like almost everything you bring your dog in for can be traced back to organ health. The lymphatic system, the liver, the kidneys, the heart, the lungs, the gastrointestinal tract. When those things aren't working like they should, especially the liver and the lymphatic system, and the nervous system is number one, in my opinion. But when those things aren't being supported and when they're not working like they should, that's when we start having problems. And when you know what to look for as a preventative measure, you can get out ahead of that and start supporting your animal, supporting their endocrine system, supporting their kidneys, getting their lymphatics flowing, helping their liver consistently throughout the year. When these things start to happen, you get better health outcomes, you get more longevity, you get arthritis that disappears. And I don't treat disease because I'm not a medical doctor. But what I do is I focus on organ health. And when I teach people how to look for the early signs, like for instance, the kidneys. So you see a lot of kidney problems in the winter. The winter is ruled by kidney, the winter affects the kidneys, highly affects the kidneys, like summer affects the heart. And when you have dogs that lay down and they do a lot of groaning, they do that, they lay down. And when they do that consistently, that the kidneys need assistance. They need support. There's a lot of signs that you can look for. And when your dog does those things consistently, or like dogs that are really fearful, when they're afraid of everything or really reactive to things, noises, noise sensitive, right? I don't necessarily deal with that behavior. What I do is I go in and help that person support their dog's kidneys. And usually within a couple of months, those behaviors disappear.
Well, you know what I thought you were going to say when you said you could boil that down to, and you ended up saying the kidneys having an issue, and I thought you were going to say all the way down to the products we use to wash their bedding or the what we use to clean the floors and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's more up the
Wow.
food chain, but absolutely. There's a reason why, our dogs' organs aren't working well, and the environment in our homes, it makes a huge component of that.
So speaking of the environment in our home, so we have a bad day. It happens to humans. That's
Yeah.
not great for the dog either, is it? Not just
No.
because some people, hopefully nobody kicks dogs anymore, but it's not just that. Well, in a sense, we are. They feel it, right?
Yeah. And well, the
Emotionally speaking.
interesting thing, the interesting thing is, I think we think that we communicate with our dogs through speech, and we don't. we're making noises, they react to the tone of our voice, sure.
Yeah.
But our dogs react or interact with us through smell and through vibration and smell, right? So like energy. And when we smell like cortisol and adrenaline, when we're in fight or flight, and unfortunately, just the act of scrolling on your phone, just the
What?
simple act of scrolling on your phone,
What?
has been scientifically proven to put you in a low level fight or flight mode,
Wow.
right? When you
Wow.
are on social media, scrolling, right? You're in a low level fight or flight, whether you like it or not. And, a lot of us are in fight or flight throughout the day. Mothers who have issue, maybe hard to deal with kids, they get heated with, trying to control their children. They're in fight or flight multiple times a day. You get in fight or flight at work multiple times a day. You've got deadlines and stress and complaining. And then some people react to traffic and, all of these things. We can walk into our house and we smell like cortisol and adrenaline. And our dogs want to be safe, just like we do, right? I think everyone has a human right to safe being feel safe. But when we smell like that, we're not safe. And our dogs don't feel safe. There's a lovely scientific research center called the HeartMath Institute.
Yes.
And they have proven that our electromagnetic fields of our heart goes out like 6 to 8 feet from our bodies, right? And you have to look at like how close is your dog to you on a normal basis. They're usually laying at your feet, laying near you, laying within 8 feet of you most of the time. And we share those emotions with our dogs. And a lot of people that are stressed out have stressed out, anxious dogs. And when you get your stress under hand, your dogs will follow suit. And people ask me, Rita, what's the best herb for my dog to, for longevity? And I always tell people it's not an herb. Get your stress under hand. Find out what stresses you out and minimize it. And your dog will change. It's amazing how quickly they do.
Wow.
Yeah. And that
Wow.
affects everything. It's a cascade because without a nervous system, without a stable nervous system, there are so many things that can't happen in the body. And this goes for humans too. You can't digest your food well. You can't process toxins through your liver very well. Your kidneys don't work all that well. Your lungs are not filtering pathogens like they should. Your lymphatic system goes on just a slow hum while you're in fight or flight. And a lot of dogs and people have a really hard time having what I would say heart rate variability, which means what you can switch yourself out of fight or flight into a relaxation state where you do all your, filtering in the liver, your digestion, your lymphatic is going well. You have to switch yourself in and out, right? And a lot of dogs will get stuck in fight or flight as well as people.
Well, the herbal dog, holistic canine herbalism application and practice. There's so much information in there, and it obviously, as we're having this conversation, you're seeing the depth of this. And it's available where books are sold, right? Online and all that.
Everywhere, yeah.
And people could go directly to your website, right? And your social media. Which do we want to give out?
I have two websites, canineherbalism.com, which is my course platform, my podcast, and all of that good stuff. And then canineherbalist.com is my store, my consulting, and you can purchase my book there too if you want.
Very nice. And then on social media, Canine Herbalist. Simple as that, right?
Yes.
So you talked about digestion, and one last place I really wanted to go to, because I was happy to see that in there too, because I'm just learning about this for humans, and here it is, you're helping people with their dogs. And that is the terrain, the gut, and all of that.
Yes.
What is important about that, and how can we support our dogs simply at home? Obviously, read it in the book, but.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, like, I think trying to feed the freshest diet that you can. And I have a small section on feeding in the book, doing what you can to improve the bowl. But working on the inner terrain of your dog. So the inside of your dog, you know, instead of focusing on all the things that are going to harm your dog from the outside, focus on building resiliency inside your dog. And, you know, one of the easiest ways to do that is through stabilizing the nervous system with herbs, feeding the body with herbs and medicinal mushrooms. They, wow. You know, it's not complicated like a lot of people think. It can be easy as making a cup of tea with your dog. You know, like when your dog has sensitivities to the environment, it's definitely their liver and lymphatics, but nettles. Nettles are really great for allergies. I have been drinking gallons of nettles over the last couple of days, and it's kept me from taking things like Zyrtec or Benadryl. I don't want to take those things into my body. And so it's really helped me breathe and work through these sensitivities in just a couple of days, where my doctor said, oh, well, you know, this can last for weeks. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't have weeks. Come on. I'm on a book tour. And you know, medicinal mushrooms, I know they're very like all the rage right now, but they really do benefit our dogs as well as people. And they tick all the boxes as well. You know, they modulate the immune system. They're anti-inflammatory. They are antioxidant. Dogs do really well with them in powder form and sometimes tinctures made out of glycerin. And we can see good changes with herbs and mushrooms combined, and just as easy as putting it over their food.
Wow. Wow. I have to say it must feel good to know that you're using all the information that you have researched and experienced and bringing it to people, that they could do things that are potentially less expensive and potentially even more helpful in some cases without side effects, and happy dogs can also mean happy people, happy world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are a reflection of those around us. So I absolutely believe in that. And, you know, again, it's such a privilege to share our space with these lovely animals.
Mm. So the book, again, The Herbal Dog, Holistic Canine Herbalist, Applications and Practice. And, of course, our guest is Rita Hogan, CH. And as we go, what's one of the things that you, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of dog listeners, people listening to this. What other information, other than what's in the book, that you also want to make sure that you leave them with, a good piece of advice?
Well, I hate to, you know, be a broken record, but, you know, statistically, 1 in 2 dogs will die of cancer. And all cancer is unmanaged stress in the body, both physically and mentally. You know, the biggest thing is try not to get overwhelmed. Like, take one thing that you can improve, one thing every week that you can improve for yourself and your dog, you know? And it's those little things, those little increments of positive changes that add up so quickly in our life to improve it. Mm. And I think that when we improve our own lives, we definitely improve our animals' life.
Mm. Wow. Well, thank you for that. I have canineherbalist.com. Is it herbalist or which one is it?
It's herbalist and herbalism. Okay. So I have both.
Oh, both. Okay. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And I also have the herbaldog.com. Is that good too?
Yes, that's my book's website.
Okay. And there you can find the book. And I know you do one-on-ones with people and dogs, but you're on a book tour right now, but you're out in Washington doing obviously what you've come here to do, Rita. And we're glad you're doing it.
I work with people all over the world. So.
Oh, you do? Online and all, or you travel?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
okay. I work online with people.
Okay. And they can obviously reach you through your website. And again, on social media, Canine Herbalist. Find her on Facebook and Instagram and X. Rita, it's been a pleasure. So great to bring this information forward. It's time for this kind of thing. Thank you for doing it.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Fabulous information. What else do we have for our dog listeners?
Oh my gosh, right? A whole book. Like 468 pages or something like that. There's so much information here.
So much information. And, you know, it got me thinking, imagine we kind of just subscribe to the quotes in the air, the norm. And then I was thinking about the age, the age limits of dogs.
Yeah.
You know, these 6, 8, 7, 12, and it's just normal. What if they could be living twice as long or something, right? Just like she's saying, exactly. So, I mean, in a more consistent manner to be able to employ what she's done across the whole, everybody's best friends would stick around a lot longer.
Oh, when you put it that way. Yeah.
Well, it is man's and woman's best friend, right? So why not extend their lifespan as well?
Well,
she brought up so many wonderful points.
I'm hoping that she'll bring up the herbal cat book and make that the herbal horse book. And I didn't ask her, but I'm
rabbits, chinchillas. Rabbits. We just keep it going.
Well, so this is a great time. We not only do we have this great conversation that we had, we're going to have another great conversation with our performance guest here in just a moment. But in the meantime, this is time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Samantha, and I would appreciate your insight once again. Many of my spiritual friends have lots of crystals, and I know that you have many crystals yourself. Several of my friends have told me that crystals could help me manage my depressive anxiety. Is there scientific proof that this is true? Do you believe that crystals could help me with this? And if so, I would like to know which ones you believe would be best for helping me with lowering my anxiety.
I'm so excited to talk about crystals. I really am surrounded by them. And it's really good, Samantha, to hear from you again, and I love your questions. The belief in crystals helping with anxiety or healing is rooted in spiritual and metaphysical traditions and not in science. I personally have not found any scientific evidence that crystals have inherent energetic properties that can directly affect your mental health or your physical body. However, that doesn't mean that they are useless. Many people, like me, find comfort, focus, and emotional grounding with crystals. I have found that holding or focusing on a crystal during meditation can help ground and calm my mind. I have personally experienced reduced anxiety by meditating while holding crystals. I have discovered that there are certain crystals that represent peace, strength, or love, and that focusing on those qualities can inspire emotional shifts. One of my favorite crystals for reducing anxiety is aragonite. It has helped me reduce stress and enhance patience. I believe that it is a very supportive stone, and I recommend it for personal growth. There are also many other crystals that are commonly recommended to reduce stress. Amethyst, lapidolite, rose quartz, black tourmaline, blue lace agate, smoky quartz, and fluorite are some of my favorites. I've discovered that amethyst provides calming energy, aids with stress and insomnia. Rose quartz promotes self-love, emotional healing, and gentleness. Black tourmaline appears to absorb negative energy and provide grounding. Blue lace agate brings peace and calmness. Smoky quartz has helped in releasing fear, and fluorite helps bring clarity, and it stabilizes emotional energy. If you're interested in trying crystal therapy, you could start with aragonite, amethyst, or lapidolite, as they're often recommended for anxiety and are easy to find. I often hold one while meditating, and I put one under my pillow and sleep on it. And let's remember, dear Samantha, that crystals are not a replacement for therapy, mindfulness practices, or medical care, but they can be a very helpful part of a holistic approach to calming anxiety and may bring you comfort, focus, or a sense of control. I look forward to hearing from you regarding the benefits you receive if you begin working with some of the crystals I have mentioned.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, get crystal clear and write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And with that, it's time for our performance segment. And we have the pleasure of a singer, entertainer, a band leader, Tino Macchia. Welcome, Tino, to the Life Changes Show.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you? Very, very pleased to be here.
It's great to have you here, especially after so many years and so many stories and so many experiences, and some of which we're going to talk about now. When were you first interested in singing?
Well, that's how much time do you have?
Yeah.
I mean, you probably remember that. My father was, he's retired, but he was a very, very, very popular Italian singer. And for the better half of my years, up until I was in my 30s, I played accordion in my dad's band. I take that back. I've always wanted to sing secretly. I was just Elvis, Sinatra, Tom Jones, all in, rolled into one, but I never had the courage. I was just afraid of my own shadow. So I just played the accordion. So I've always wanted to be a singer. It just wasn't in the cards until many, many years later.
And what made you just do it?
Well, my father always wanted me to sing, so I could carry the torch. But again, it just never happened. A long story short, one day, one of my high school buddies was in town and he arranged for all of us, the buddies, to get together. And he made the arrangements. We go there. We have a good time. We have a few beers. I noticed that it's a karaoke night. I've never been to a karaoke bar. And he said, no, these things are very popular, because he lived in Hawaii. These things are very popular. They're a lot of fun. Okay, whatever. So we had a few beers. We caught up and we chit-chatted. And then a few minutes later, I get a call and the DJ's calling my name to sing next. I never did that. My face turns red. I said, there's no way I'm going up.
Oh, somebody put you on the list?
Well, it turns out that it was my buddy. He secretly went behind my back and he knew that I was shy. And
you're shy?
Oh my gosh, you have no idea.
I never said
more than two words. Literally, no, I never said more than two words to anybody. I was just afraid of my own shadow. No self-worth, no confidence. I was just a little Italian kid playing accordion in the background, never wanted any attention. So I went up to the DJ and I said, listen, my friend, there's just no way I'm going up there. He said, no, don't worry. You know, we get people like that all the time. It's just very simple. I said, you don't understand. I am just not going to do this. He goes, just listen to me. Just look through the booklet, see if there's a song that you recognize, and just have a good time and sing it. So they all coerced me. The whole room now is chanting my name and egging me on. And I was redder than a beet. So I picked a song that I thought I recognized, and I sang it, went back to the table, shook my fist at my buddy. We all had a good laugh. Turns out that they were having a contest that night. So the DJ called, and I swear, I am not making any of this up. This is word for word off the gospel truth.
I did not know this.
The DJ calls everybody back on stage that had sung that the same night. And he did the typical, you know, went behind each one and held his hand over the heads. And the whole bar is supposed to applaud for their favorite. I won first place. $75, and I'll never forget it.
Well, can I ask you what song you picked?
It was a Tom Jones
song.
It ties together. It just ties in together. It's
that
just,
is brilliant.
You can't script this. It
that
just...
is brilliant. Oh, wow.
Now, mind you, I was in my 30s, so I wasn't a young, you know, I went almost my half of my life not singing a note in public.
I did not know that.
So
that's amazing.
It was funny.
So, yes, when I, like, I remember seeing you, maybe the first time I really saw you was in Vegas singing, because up until then, I think you were playing the accordion, right? So,
exactly.
But I saw you walked on stage in Vegas, and I thought you'd been doing this forever. Seriously.
Oh my God. No, that was probably the very, very beginning when you first saw me.
Wow.
That was the complete, first stages, basically.
That's an amazing story. And so it's interesting that years later, we were talking a few months ago, actually, and you said you were starting a tribute band and or you were doing a particular show. And in my mind, I thought, I hope it's Tom Jones.
Because
I remember how the audience reacted when you did Tom Jones in Vegas. And so I thought, I hope it's that. Well, evidently, I'm not the only one that was hoping with that. Somebody much more important to you in your life was hoping it would be that. As a matter of fact, I understand she said, do it.
Well, no, I'm getting goosebumps listening to you say that, because that's exactly what happened. My wife, we just got married. We're going to be celebrating our third wedding anniversary coming up this August. And she attended a few of my shows, and I would sprinkle, because I have a variety dance band. We know we do a lot of just a lot of the crooners, a lot of the 80s. It's just a lot of different things. And I would sprinkle a couple of Tom Jones songs in here and there. And my wife comes up to me one night and she literally tells me, hey, I see how people, I walk around, I see how people react when you sing that. She said, why don't you just do a whole Tom Jones tribute show? And I said, are you crazy? It's not just, you can't just, you know, snap your fingers.
Well, it's not unusual.
Oh, God. If I had a dollar for every time. Okay.
Okay. I had to.
I love it. I know. So, and then she says, you just have to. I say, but it's not that simple. You can't just go to the store and buy charts, because if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it right. I don't want to half-ass it. I did a lot of research. The show is now exactly the configuration that Tom had when he toured the world for years.
Wow, I got to see it.
Oh my gosh, four horns, two female background singers, full rhythm section. Everything is charted and arranged note for note, just like the original versions. Wow. I am just so proud of this show. So then she said, you should just do it. You know, you've been wanting to do this your whole life. And I just kept poo-pooing it. And then at the end, she says, and this is the kicker, she said, if you don't do it now, you'll always regret it. And that was it. That's all it took. That was the spark. I just took it, got in touch with some of the finest arrangers that we have here in Orange County and Hollywood. And we have about two dozen of the biggest hits that Tom ever had arranged. And now the funny thing is, you haven't seen me for a while, but the funny thing is I make no effort to look like Tom, and anyone who sees my picture says, that doesn't look like Tom.
Nor
at all.
Should you.
I've had people
say, you're
not
an impersonator.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you for saying that, because that's exactly, I said, I do not want to make this a mockery. This is not a parody. This is not a cheap, cheesy impersonation. This is going to be a celebration of his music the right way. And that's exactly what critics are saying. They're even comparing my voice to his, which is the ultimate compliment that I could ever get.
Nice. Well, we're not going to get to hear that today, but people can find you all over social media, and we even have a video of you on the Life Changes show. And I should spell his last name, so Tino, T-I-N-O, Macchia, M-A-C-C-H-I-A. And so Tino, you said you've been married now coming up on 3 years. Right. The first song we're going to play is about something. Actually, before we get into that, so we've talked about you being on the show before, and we feature original music, and you said, I don't have any songs that I've written. And so I have to say, to get a text from you saying, Filippo, I've written a song, was a surprise. But the bigger surprise was the style. Like,
oh, no.
The style.
You can't, again, you can't script this. This is, you cannot make this up. I mean, as a musician, the first thing that people ask you is, oh, do you have any original material? And for my whole life, up until about a year ago, I've always had to say no. I've never, ever thought of it. I didn't think I could. I've always loved the idea of being a lyricist. That came very easily to me. But never in a million years that I just didn't even think about it. I had other fish to fry. I just did not think I could do it, so I never even tried.
Wow. So I don't know which to ask you first. So how did it end up being?
Well, long story short, I might try to make this really short. My first wife, she passed away of cancer back in 2006. And at the time, my daughter was 4 years old. So it was just the two of us for the better part of 16 years. It was just my daughter and I, and that was it. I had to learn how to raise a young daughter. I had no clue. I'm sure I made some mistakes. I did the best that I could. And then a couple of years ago, she is old enough now. She moved out on her own, and I just don't see her as much as I would want to. I miss the heck out of it. I mean, you can imagine I was a single father for all those years. And now I find myself, I just don't see her as much as I want to. So a few months ago, late last year, my very good cousin, very good friend of mine, who happens to be a cousin, invited us to attend his daughter's wedding, his only daughter. And we went, and it was at the time where they were having the traditional father-daughter dance. Something just got a hold of me. I was mesmerized. It was such a touching moment to see the father. He was just touched dancing with his daughter, and something inside of me just clicked. And I just, it stuck with me, because that whole night, I just couldn't get that scene out of my head. And it almost brought tears to my eyes. I came home. I just couldn't sleep. I came up with a melody and the chorus and the lyrics. They literally, it sounds like a cliche, but it literally just wrote themselves. The lyrics just popped into my head. I couldn't sleep. I went on my computer, typed it all down. Next morning, got the arrangement. I literally just put it together on a keyboard, wrote everything. Literally, if I can't say that enough. It was just the oddest experience, Philippe. I really don't know what the hell I was doing. It was just happening in front of my eyes. I wrote it all down. I arranged the music, sent it over to the musicians. They recorded it for me. I sang it. And it was just unreal. It was very, very surreal. And like you said, the kicker is that, and now being a musician, you know, I appreciate all kinds of music. I really do. I have to appreciate all kinds. And I'm not really much of a country fan. And I've always been that way. I've never really been listening to country. I don't really know who any of the country artists are that are out there. But for some crazy reason, this song was screaming at me to be played and performed in a country style. And I don't ask me how. It's one of the greatest mysteries of my life. But it's if you listen to it, it's definitely country. And I have no idea why. I don't know.
Not a little bit. Definitely country. Well, Tino, when I first heard the song and knowing the story, more power to you. And what beautiful sentiment. And for all that you've been through, again, what can I say? God bless you. So here is Tino Macchia's first song he's ever written, first country song he's probably ever sung.
I tell people that I'm the country's first non-country artist.
Here is pre-recorded All the Years on the Life Changers Show.
He got the news today that his best friend's daughter would wed. And for a minute, he struggled with painful thoughts in his head. It had been a few years since his own daughter left on her own. Been trying to make peace with the fact that he was alone. Her sweet mama passed when his daughter was just about four. He did the best that he could, but one day she walked out that door. Now he knows that attending this wedding would tear him apart. He raised a glass to his friend, but in the end, it was breaking his heart. And he saw his friend dance with his little girl all dressed in white. The same little girl to whom he whispered sweet dreams every night. He'd fought back the tears, but his feelings he just couldn't hide. All the years of raising a daughter fills a man up with pride. That night in his house he would stare as he walked down the hall at the family pictures and memories there on the wall. Then he stopped at the one of his daughter and started to pray. He got into his bed, closed his eyes, and drifted away. Then he saw himself dancing with his little girl all dressed in white. With the same little girl to whom he whispers sweet dreams every night. And as he fought back the tears, with her smile, all his fears would subside. All the years of raising a daughter fills a man up with pride. Yes, all the long, hard years of raising a daughter fills a man up with pride.
Dino Macchia, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And
it was my pleasure.
Wow. Let's share where people can hear the music. I know it's available on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Play, etc. And
exactly, yes, yes.
And where do they find you on socials?
The Tom Jones Show is Instagram. It's tino.tomjonesshow, all one word. And the other variety show is tino.entertainment.
Speaking of that Tom Jones Show, what's that new show called?
It's called What's New Pussycat?
A Tom Jones Legacy Tribute. Well, your story has a happy next chapter, and that leads into this next song. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, it does have a happy ending, and again, my wife, I owe everything to her. Not only did she inspire me to do the tribute show, she actually inspired me to do a lot of things, to actually better yourself. I mean, we didn't think it was possible, but but yes, she actually has helped me discover a lot of things about myself. I am always learning new things. She is a blessing. And I hope she's listening, and I basically owe her a lot. I really do. And so this song, again, it's very similar to the last time. It just wrote itself. I was just contemplating how things happen. And that's basically, it's something really good to people to know that not to be afraid of the bad times, because when the good times come back into your life, and they inevitably will, when they do come, it'll be the bad times that will make the good times better. You'll appreciate the good times more if you remember what you've been through. And that's exactly what I was doing one night. And I just was thankful that it turned out the way it did. Turns out that, again, super long story, but our families have known each other since we were kids. And I never knew she existed, because I knew her family, but I never knew that she existed. We reconnected, and I'm extremely thankful, because my whole life has changed. And this song is kind of like an homage to what she represents in my life and what she has helped me to achieve and to overcome. So everything that happens, all my achievements, all my successes, I essentially owe to her. And I wanted to just give her something that tells that. I know, kind of sappy, huh?
No, it's great. As a matter of fact, the song is called "I'm Glad." I think it could be "I'm Glad for Maria." Maria.
Yeah, a lot of people were thinking, why did you write it in the, you know, in that context? Where I said, no, because I was floating around aimlessly, and I'm glad, I was thankful that I bumped into her. I'm glad and thankful that she came into my life, that I found her.
Well, and now we'll get to hear it. Here is Tino Macchia's song, "I'm Glad," pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show.
So many faces in so many places, from big old cities to small towns. Although I haven't met her, I knew that something better was waiting for me round the bend, and you were. And I'm glad that you found me. Finally found me. stars all around me.
Tino Macchia, TinoMacchia. Check him out on all the socials and check out his music at Spotify and on Apple. And Tino, I'm happy for you. Looking forward to more music from you. And I have to see this show.
Yeah, absolutely. I will put you on the guest list. I'm going to give you a couple of dates. I would love to have you as my special guest.
Well, please share it with us in enough time so we can also share it with our audience, and more power to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I thank you very much.
Our pleasure, Tino. With a big thank you to Tino Macchia, and another big thank you to our interview guest, Rita Hogan. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.